Families have a lot going on. Let Ollie help manage the mental load with new cognitive health supplements for everyone 4 and up, like delicious Ollie Focus Pops or Ollie Mellow Pops for kids. And for parents, try 3 new Brainy Chews to help you focus, chill out, or get energized. Find these cognitive health buddies for the whole fam at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Oh my gosh, I'm anxiety. Where can I put my stuff?
Oh my gosh, such a cute movie. All right, let's talk about social anxieties. Everyone has them, even if you don't always perhaps put a name on them like this. Maybe you don't like parties or crowds or having to meet new people, or maybe it's actually all of those things. And it may feel these days like it's more intense, but actually we have had forms of anxiety for a long time. Let's talk about the history of it now. Dr. Dean Burnett is with us, neuroscientist and author of Emotional Ignorance, Lost and Found in the Science of Emotion. Dr. Burnett, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me again, Simi. Always a pleasure.
Doesn't everyone, Dr. Burnett, have some kind of anxiety?
Yeah, I mean, anxiety is pretty much unavoidable in the modern human world. I mean, if you look at the diagnostic manuals for mental health conditions, depression, you need consistent symptoms for 2 weeks, usually, and for general anxiety disorders, something like 6 months, because just having some sort of low-level anxiety is just a common part of life. You know, it doesn't matter what it is, it causes it. So, yeah, anxiety itself is very common, and one of the most common anxiety manifestations is social anxiety. So, yeah, it's a very typical part of life.
Okay, so how did these develop? Have we always kind of had them? We just didn't put a name to it, perhaps?
Quite possibly. I mean, I think they do probably predate much of the modern technical language we have around these disorders. It sort of seems a bit counterintuitive when you think about humans are actually classed as ultra social, like the most social species, because we put up with each other better than any other species. I know it doesn't seem like that when you spend any time online or underneath the comment section, but harsh words are one thing. We very rarely attack each other when you consider how many humans are on this planet. So yes, we are a very, very social species, and so much of how we think and act and operate depends on interaction with other people. But what that means is, because we are such a social species, because we depend on the approval of others for our well-being and stuff, then the risk of earning their criticism or their rejection is something which really affects us deeply. Like we have evolved to experience some sort of psychological pain whenever we are rejected by even a random stranger. Like, studies have shown this. So yeah, because we depend so much on social interaction, that's a secret of our success according to some theories, but you need a lot of intelligence to do that. The risk of social rejection becomes far more profound. So it's a part of who we are and how we operate.
Right. Did we develop this as a coping mechanism? Did we develop it as like a survival instinct? How did this come about?
Yeah, survival instinct will be it, because when we think of creatures like solitary predators like tigers and stuff, they presumably don't care about the approval of their fellow tigers. Whereas you've got something like a pride of lions, which is a similar creature, but behaves very differently in a communal setting, where humans took that to the extremes, whereby being part of a tribe was essential for our survival and shaped our evolution. Like belonging to a group of humans, being cooperative, is the key to our evolutionary success. So therefore, if you don't care about being part of a tribe, you will wander off by yourself and into the wilds of nature when we live there and get eaten by something, or just lose your way back, or not have anyone sharing resources with you. Whereas if you have like this innate fear, this innate sort of desire to avoid any sort of social rejection, you tend to stay close to your tribe and tend to stay cooperating and interactive. And that means you survive better. So yes, the instinctive fear of being rejected by others is something which probably helped humans become what they are today. So it's been with us for a long time.
Is it going to take time for us to develop them? Because now, obviously, crowds, all of that is very different than it would have been back then, right, when these developed. So do we need to develop kind of new instincts about all this?
That feasibly could happen, but I'd say it's almost got as much chance of going the other way now, because we're more interconnected than ever. Especially with technology, social media, you can have hundreds and thousands and even millions of people just looking at you, for want of a better term. There's people on Instagram or TikTok who have millions of followers. So, the idea that you could just like say whatever you want, do whatever you want, and be rejected by millions of people in one go is probably quite a profound, profoundly upsetting one for a lot of people.
But people treat that differently, though, don't they, Dr. Burnett? They think that being online is different than talking to people in person. It's almost like we've developed some kind of barrier between those two.
Yeah, when we talk in person, that's what we've spent millions of years evolving to do that. And we, you know, we expect a certain degree of emotional information or physical information to come across with a conversation, which you don't get with technology because it's not that advanced yet. But there is still enough overlap for people to realize, you know, people do consider online relationships to be real, to be to be sort of tangible. And this is why you get people saying, like, you get people having mental health issues because of online abuse. So cyberbullying is a real thing. Just because they're not in the room with you doesn't mean it's not profoundly impactful. So the idea that we are, if anything, we have greater scope for rejection than we used to. Although social media offers more control as well. So it's six of one, half a dozen of the other. But yeah, I don't see it going away anytime soon, even on the evolutionary scale.
Right. Even with social media, I wonder, do we decide how social of a person that we are? Like, depending on how much social media we do. I'm sure there's people who feel like, oh, I'm not going out in public. I don't want to socialize. I don't want to go to parties. But they might be very active on social media. That's still social, isn't it?
Totally, yeah. That's absolutely it's one of the key draws of social media. It's that you can have the sort of, you can satisfy this instinctive desire we have to be connected to others and to get their feedback, their interaction. And without any sort of the physical effort involved in going places, and without any of the, some risk, but not as much risk of it. Because when you're talking to someone face-to-face, you have, a lot of, things to worry about. You know, am I going to say the wrong thing? Am I going to react in time? Am I going to misinterpret something? Are they going to misinterpret something? There's a lot of variables to consider in a face-to-face, right, real-time interaction. Whereas social media, you can spend as long as you like picking the perfect selfie, crafting the perfect post, putting the video together. So it's a lot more control is offered there. So it is more appealing to some.
Is that the same kind of reward that we get in our brain then, connecting with people socially so that we can help identify our social status?
It's sort of on the same spectrum, but it most research suggests it's not as profound, not as rewarding, because even when you do have like a very active online existence, it's still, most people would say, face-to-face meetings are what makes them real. You have lots of people having online relationships, but when they finally meet in person, that's when it becomes a real thing. Because it is very hard to sustain something like a romantic relationship in a purely virtual space. It has to be this physical element. And there is some degree of reward and feedback from social media and virtual interactions, but face-to-face ones will always sort of take priority as far as our brain is concerned. It's sort of like social media interactions are like they're sweeteners, artificial sweeteners. You can, some of them is fine. It gives you the same experience, but over time, you have too much of it. It's not healthy. It's not good for you, and it's you need other things too. So, yeah, I think it scratches part of the itch, but not the whole thing, in terms of how we crave interactions.
Right. So when people feel like, oh, I've got anxiety, we should say, no, don't worry, we're not the only ones here. Everybody has some form of this.
Yeah, and social anxiety is the most profound form. I mean, I think there's a big difference between everyday anxiety and anxiety disorders. That's one of those sort of unfortunate aspects of how our language works. And when people say I'm depressed, they could mean I just didn't get a promotion, or they could mean I have a clinical disorder. It's annoying that the same word means two things, like saying,
true,
I've got a paper cut, I've lost a leg. Those aren't the same thing, but having the same word for both would be inconvenient. But yes, people do have anxiety. Anxiety is an everyday part of life. If you're feeling anxious about something, that doesn't mean something's wrong with you. It's when you can't stop being anxious, for any given length of time, for 6 months on end, that's when something might be going wrong.
Right. Right. We do need to develop more nuance with those words. Dr. Burnett, thank you so much for your time.
Thanks a lot. No
problem. Appreciate that. That's Dr. Dean Burnett, neuroscientist and author of Emotional Ignorance, Lost and Found in the Science of Emotion, talking about our history with social anxiety. It has been something we've always had. We just called it probably something different, and we did it instinctually, and we are still doing it, actually, except now we put a name on it, I think, when we have those kinds of feelings, right?